This special podcast is brought to you by Westbrook. Well, every quarter we get our insight into what's happening, what's really happening in the UK. Because you can't fool the property market. You can fool people with newspaper headlines. You can tell family and friends all is well. But the bottom line is in property, that does never, ever go against the long-term economic trends. And we're going to find out from in our usual quarterly chat with Dino Zuccolo, who's the head of investor solutions, and James Lightbody, who's actually in the UK, both with Westbrook, exactly what's going on there. But perhaps to frame it, Dino, the Westbrook Yield Plus product is the one that we talk about every quarter. It's very popular amongst the BizNews community. But there are presumably people who are watching this for the first time and saying, that's interesting. What's it all about?
Yeah, thanks for having us, Alec. And just as an anecdote before we get into it, this is our first catch-up since I attended your event in Hermanus with your tribe a couple months ago. And it was staggering for me to engage with the audience in person and to actually see how many people have invested in the product, who have looked at and understood sort of the dynamics of what we do. And to engage with everyone in person was great, and well done on an excellent event. Alec,
oh, thanks. Just on that, I have to thank you for the coffee as well. We got lots of very excellent feedback. You guys sponsored the coffee, and we would, our tribe were delighted. So big thumbs up to you too.
It's a pleasure. We'll definitely be there next time. So Alec, Westbrook Yield Plus is Westbrook's flagship investment product or fund. It's a UK investment product, but domiciled out of Jersey, which means that if you're a South African investor, you invest in a regulated expert fund based in Jersey, and that's got some tax advantages to it. The main one of which is that you either pay CGT or dividends tax at 20% if you take the money out, or if you stay invested, you pay 18% on the way out at the end only. And that's obviously a big saving relative to being in some form of an interest-bearing investment at up to 45%. And what Yield Plus is, Alec, in the simplest of terms, is a fund that is diversified across somewhere between 40 and 50 loans. We're just over 40 at the moment. And what James and team in the UK do is they play the role of bank against properties in the major six metros of the UK. And the UK market is constructed such that there are inefficiencies in certain areas of the market, and that comes to speed, complexity, size, etc., where we're able to capitalize, I suppose, really based on the arbitrage that a £10 million loan is not that big in the UK, but in South Africa, you're nearing 250 million rand. The fund has now got a 7.5-year track record of performance and is delivering somewhere at the moment between 7.5% and 8% net in pounds for our investors. We've never had a down month, and I guess it's extremely popular amongst the tribe for that reason, especially on the basis, I guess, that if you're invested in cash in the UK, which is where a lot of people are keeping their money in lieu of investing in Yield Plus, you're somewhere between sort of 1.5% and 2% in the bank.
James is going to tell us exactly how these loans work. Maybe you can give us a case study, James.
Yeah, exactly. I think what's very different here is we are actually manufacturing the loans, if you will, not buying from other people. Our team on the ground is meeting with borrowers, with brokers, structuring the loans much like a bank would. So we're very close to the borrowers, to the security, and there's no one in between us at all. So we're in control of the process end to end. I think a good example of how we do this, and now having operated for quite a few years in the subsector where we are, which just as a reminder is focusing on the small end of the market, sub £30 million loans, all income producing. So there's never any roll up generally. All the services cash paid, and we're working with sponsors that we tend to work with again and again. And that's in quite a small niche subsector of the market. But, for the UK, that's a few billion pounds a year, which is quite a lot for our appetite. So a good example of how we did this, there was a sponsor we'd worked with, or borrower we'd worked with before, alone in Brighton. They have a long track record of 20 odd years. They successfully develop things. They operate, do a whole lot of things. They developed or refurbished an office in Putney, which is just south of the Thames. Very good office market there. It's not quite the city or the West End, but absolutely kind of a office market for London there. And they refurbished this, and as part of the refinance to take it out, they had a lender lined up to do it. They typically use the high street banks at a very cheap pricing. In this case, that lender had an issue right at the end, which delayed them by a month. They turned to us and said, "Hey, you know, if you can do this quickly, we'll work with you on it." And the reason we're actually able to do that was because we knew the office market in that location from having lent on buildings quite close by. We knew a whole lot of sponsors who were buying in that area, could confirm all the assumptions. So we were actually able to turn that around in 2 weeks in terms of approval, and then implement shortly thereafter, and managed to win it at a rate that was quite a bit higher than really should have happened for that location. So I guess that's a good example of how we actually win deals in the market.
Putney, you'd know, being South African.
Yeah, I mean, I actually don't live in Putney. Obviously, half of the South African community in the UK does. In this case, I mean, just to give a little bit of detail, not to get overly technical, but obviously in this case, the building was finished. The actual developer that developed it, quite a big group, so some material nav, they took the bottom floor. So there was income from day one. They had leases signed with blue chip tenants to take another two floors. So the way we structured it was to draw some of the funds on day one. Against the first lease being completed at a relatively low to value. And then as they added these leases, because you only wanted to fund when the actual tenants moved in, not when they signed the leases, then we drew down a bit more. And then when they let the top floor, which has views all over London, the building's been refurbished to a high spec, which is important because a nuance for the market of London, the high quality stuff lets very quickly, low quality stuff doesn't let at all. So you've got to be very nuanced in what you're actually lending against. And in this case, we structured a multi-tranche drawdown, quite flexible, a bit more expensive, but worked for the client.
Yeah, Alec, and I mean, maybe just to come in there, I think the point you make is a very good one, which is, as you can hear, myself and James are both South African, and the UK is not the market that we've grown up in since we were young, you know, and we laugh often. I mean, when we're bringing on new people or when we're doing transactions in South Africa, we often phone the people in our UK office to reference the South Africans back home. And so I suppose the question is, how do we get comfort on an asset class where literally being on the left or right hand side of the road has a very material impact in the valuation and the quality of what you're lending against? And I think the answer there is a multi-pronged approach. The first and foremost sort of consideration there, Alec, is that the way we've constructed the fund and the way we construct all of our offerings is that the Westbrook team and its key members sit on the investment committees for the fund. But then we include relevant expertise in country as non-executives on that fund as well. And so what we've done in the case of Westbrook Hill Plus is we've included relevant experts who've got long careers. And when I say long, I mean sort of 20, 30 years plus in the banking sector in the UK market, in the real estate sort of subsector of the market. And we rely on them heavily for two things. The first is to understand sublocations and quality of assets. And the second is to get references on the people that we are ultimately backing or getting into bed with. Because the old adage, you know, you can do a great deal with a crook and you'll probably lose money, and you can do an average deal with an honest person and you'll probably be okay, it holds true more than ever in this market today.
It also, as you say, you are in a foreign country, and that's very, very important that you understand it better. Given that it is, I suppose there are many South Africans there as well. So that does help. That opens quite a few doors, but it still is another place. And when we look at it from South Africa and you see what's going on with their politics at the moment, it does feel a little bit edgy. James, on the ground though, is this affecting the way that people are going about their lives?
I mean, in some instances, I guess it does. People are more active politically, talking about things, etc. But if you look over in the investment market for real estate, really the things that drive that are the more traditional things. So the rate shock obviously impacted things quite a lot. Rates are now coming down. So you are starting to see investment pick up off the back of that. The UK has the benefit that it's still very stable legal market. The courts rule the roost, as they always have, very consistent in terms of applying the law, a very steady investment environment. So while, you know, the politics is more on the social side of things, but on the investment side, it is very consistent, very high capital flows. If you look at London, the UK, it's always number one or number two internationally for the capital flows coming through. And the numbers are pretty astounding. So there's still quite a lot of investment in the UK. I would say the other factor that's impacted the markets and continues to impact it is really when rates went up, build costs went up. Basically, nothing got built for 2-3 years. The planning system is also very congested, so it takes a long time and it's expensive to build. So assets that are there, their rents have been increasing materially as a result. And that's really the end of the market that we focus on for exactly that reason. And so we focus on income, and our loans are performing very well as the rents increase and the market gets more liquid as rates come down.
Yeah, I suppose really from a South African perspective, we've become quite resilient to the shocks that hit our system. Just have to open your eyes and you can see it in the news media on a daily basis. And we now look to the north and we say, but hang on, there's a crazy guy going nuts in Russia trying to take over Ukraine. If he does manage to beat Ukraine, what next? The Brits are not that far away. They've got some crazy people who want to take over their government, and actually they want to give them the opportunity to do so. So it's always by exception, isn't it, when you're outside of a country. What you see is not necessarily what the drama that you pick up in the news headlines is not necessarily what is affecting business on the ground. And I think you've illustrated that. But what about things like budgets and the fact that Britain also needs to raise more money somehow?
Yeah, again, I mean, this is the way that manifests, I would say, similarly to the way Trump's tariffs impacted things, was really uncertainty. Some deals just take longer to happen. Deals right now that people are thinking of buying. The second order effect is they might wait out to see what happens in the budget before they move forward. The indication on the budget is they'll simply raise income tax. That doesn't really impact property investing that much. There was a change to renters' rights, which could impact investment in residential sector. But all around, in terms of commercial investing, that regulatory environment and taxation environment relatively stable. There are quite high costs in there, but everyone's understood that and dealt with that for quite a long time. So I would say the way investments are happening on the equity side are much like we operate on the debt side. They're very granular, very ground up, depends on the street, depends on the actual building, depends on which tenants are in there. So this sort of generalized approach to just spread money around the market, you're just not seeing that anymore. And on the lending side, I think lenders that used to do that when rates were low, when rates were zero and the numbers just went up, that approach doesn't work very well either. So we feel like we're quite well placed, given that we do underwrite things from the ground up on every single deal.
So Dino, I'm sure that's the message that you give to your clients, that we do have our finger on the pulse with each individual loan, those 30 to 40 loans that their money is being invested into.
Yeah, I mean, a few things, Alex. So the first is we South Africans, and I really do believe, sitting through the investment committee process, that it gives us a bit of an edge, because this whole context of sort of the macro being quite challenging and things in the UK being complicated going forward is a relatively new concept for many of the allocators in that market. We here in South Africa have learned that you need to learn how to be able to make money in a very inconsistent and challenging macroeconomic environment, and you've got to learn how to cope with risk in those circumstances. And we've kind of taken the toolkit that we've learned here in South Africa. I mean, James worked in RMB, myself at Investec, many of us sort of in some of the major banks. We've applied it to the UK markets, and I think it gives us a little bit of an edge. That being said, things are challenging there. And our clients, when I speak to them, are a little bit antsy as to what the future may or may not hold. And I guess the question one must ask oneself is, in this type of an environment, where would you rather be? Would you be in the equity of a property, where really you're the first person to lose money if things don't go according to plan? Or would you be a lender to that property, where you know, that the value of that property has got to go down by the entire equity value in that property before you are impacted. And I think, you know, if you look at sort of on an average in the fund, our loan to value, in other words, for every £100 of property that we have a security, how much debt do we have against it? Is it fluctuates, but it sits normally between 55 and 60%. And so, you know, that means that the value of the properties that we have security over would need to decline by 40, 45% before our investors are impacted. And I suppose at 7.5 to 8% in pounds net, that's quite a nice place to be from a risk-adjusted return perspective.
But what about the pound itself? Have you guys got a view on how that is going to perform going forward?
James, I'll leave this one to you.
I mean, that's, you know, that obviously it's not currency controlled at all. So this is sort of the big flows that are happening in the world impact this. Obviously, the US is onshoring, if you believe sort of all of Trump's numbers, $20 trillion, who knows, changes kind of every day. So in theory, you should see the dollar strengthening off the back of that. But I would say, you know, it's just very hard to call. Always says that the UK relative to the EU, which is closest trading partner, that's been pretty stable now. And, you know, pound has held up for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, I'll add there, Alex. So we talk to clients about this a lot because, you know, maybe a year ago, the trade was buy yield plus because the pound is weak and now things have changed and the pound is looking quite a lot healthier and stronger. I mean, I have a strong view on this, which is when you allocate, you have an onshore allocation to SA, you have an offshore allocation in hard currency. And then when you have your hard currency allocation, one must spread it across the major economic centers of the world. If you want to speculate on the currency, then buy a currency future or forward contract, whatever the case may be. You know, like to move between underlying fundamental investments because of views you have on the currency, in my opinion, is perhaps not the right approach. Any well-constructed portfolio has dollars, it has pounds, it has euros, it has rands if you're South African. And it's the weightings within that perhaps which may move, but part of college or core allocation, I think, needs to remain in debt and then across those currencies. And this is one of the tools that one has, you know, available for that.
Yeah, and often people forget what a powerful ballast debt is in any portfolio. And I'm glad you actually picked up on the whole fact that you're going to, with equity, you have to lose before the debt gets impacted. The whole equity amount has to be wiped out in a property. What about just the portfolio allocation, maybe to close off with? How are you recommending to clients now when they have a look at that and indeed where your product would fit into it?
So I think the starting point, Alec, is we are product providers. We're experts in investing. We're not wealth advisors per se. But that being said, you know, we as Westbrook have 130 different wealth advisory houses around South Africa allocate their clients' money to us. So we talk to them about it a lot. I also read a lot on this. So if you look at allocation to alternatives in general, right? So that would include private debt, private equity, infrastructure, whatever you want. Amongst ultra high net worth globally, allocations on average of your portfolio is 100%, sits somewhere between 15%, maybe up to 20%, depending on the client. If you're a family office, obviously you have more capital to invest. Your ability to take on illiquidity is greater. Family offices globally in places like North America, the EU and the UK are up on 50%, if not even 55-60%. So that's the global context. Now, within that, there's an allocation to debt and equity and all the rest. I'd say in South Africa, we're a long way behind that curve, Alec, because frankly, we don't have access. And I think that's really one of Westbrook's missions is on James's investing side, it's to do great deals and not lose clients' money. That's his, you know, mantra. And on my side, our mission is to provide access to the types of products that a South African at this point can't get. As a consequence of that, I'd say most of our clients are between 0% and maybe 2 or 3% allocated to alternatives as a percentage of their overall portfolio. And so I think we've got a long way to go. We've got a long way to go to kind of get to mass adoption of private markets in South Africa. Within that 30%, then you've got to say, well, what do I want in debt and what do I want in equity and how do I construct that? And that's an allocation that depends entirely on your age, your need for income, how much risk you're prepared to take on, etc. But the message is South Africa's got a long way to go.
And when you say alternatives, obviously your debt product is one of them, but what are other alternatives?
Yeah, so alternatives, I kind of bucket it into two. So the first type of an alternative, Alec, is a private market asset, which is what Yield Plus is, right? Yield Plus is giving you direct private access to the types of things that you're used to getting in a listed bond. Now, the problem with the listed bond, as you know, is that it's got mark-to-market adjustments and volatility and correlation to the rest of the market. So clients come to a private market asset for that reason. Private market assets would include private credit. It would include infrastructure, private equity, venture capital, etc. The other type of an alternative is where you have a more vanilla asset like a listed equity, but you implement or you're employing a unique strategy around it. And the most common example of that is a hedge fund, where the underlying that you own is a share in a company or some form of a derivative instrument, but you're doing very different things with those underlying instruments through the different strategies that hedge fund managers employ in South Africa. In South Africa in particular, and it's interesting, I mean, every year we obviously are we present and we talk at the alternatives conferences and whatnot. I'd say alternatives effectively equal hedge funds, and there's a very nascent alternatives market in this country outside of hedge funds. And the reason for that is that hedge funds are liquid. And so a lot of our platforms and the way our investment ecosystem in this country is designed can house hedge funds much more easily than it can our products, which have less liquidity. But hedge funds are a very small component of the global world of alternatives, where the biggest asset classes are things like private equity, private debt, and the like.
So if you want private debt, in particular in the UK, there's not really that many alternatives if you're a South African and who wants to deal with South Africans. If you want to take your chances with the guys over there, I suppose it's quite an active and busy market.
You can, and there are absolutely great managers in the UK market to do that. I guess there's two issues. The first is very difficult for a South African to work out who's good and who's bad. You know, in the case of Westbrook, people know our shareholders, they know our business, they've seen the brand, and there's trust baked in. And then the second thing is just size, Alec. You know, Yield Plus, you can invest if you've got more than £100,000. And even if you want to invest less, you can come through a platform and do that through your preferred wealth advisor. Many of those competitors in the UK, and James can maybe speak to this more authoritatively, are looking for much bigger investment sizes in order to be interested. And that's just not really something that many South Africans are able to do.
Yeah, I think just to add to that, our entire real estate team is British, except for me. So our head of origination grew up in London, so he knows all the streets too, et cetera. So in some ways, you're getting the best of both there. And then our competitors generally are either they're actually family offices. So some of the lenders are actually just billionaire balance sheets that they're lending off. So there's no way to get in there. And then the one you can actually access, they more do bridge loans. So there is no direct comparable to what we're actually doing on the income lending side. And the only one that's vaguely similar, as Dino said, they have a highly structured investor pool, and it actually is a hedge fund that's setting that up. So there's actually no comparable way to come into the product set.
And you can, if I remember correctly, you open up every quarter for new investors. It's not like you open all the time.
Yes. So as a client looking to get access to Yield Plus, you can trade every quarter based on the calendar year. So obviously now we're gearing up for our intake at the end of December. What we typically say to clients over the festive season is if you'd like to make an investment, get hold of us sort of a little bit before Christmas so that you don't have to do FICA and KYC and paperwork while you're on holiday. And thereafter, investors are able to access the fund every 3 months from then. The most important thing, Alec, is when you invest, there's three choices that you need to make. So the first is whether you'd like to invest in dollars or pounds. The underlying assets are all pound assets. So if you're one of those guys that's bullish the dollar, you can come in that asset class and there's just a swap on the currency above it. The second is whether you'd like your income paid out every quarter, or whether you'd like it to automatically be reinvested and there's a tax benefit to the reinvestment. And then the third, and this is important to point out to investors, is the one There are many advantages to alternatives. You get a higher return, tax efficiency, less correlation, diversification, etc. The one downside is liquidity. So when you invest in Yield Plus, you have to choose between a 6-month notice class or a 12-month notice class. And that means that if you want your money out, there's a period of time that you need to wait. And obviously for us, that's very important because James needs to know every quarter how much money we need to pay back to our investors when he works out how much we need to raise and how much we can redeploy in underlying loans.
Yeah, and it makes a lot of sense the way that you've unpacked it. Yeah, we got great value today. Thanks, Dino and James. They are with Westbrook, and we were talking about the Westbrook Yield Plus, which is a favorite amongst many members of our BizNews tribe. And I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.